Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet. Yeah, in your browser at WFPR.FM and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9. Yeah, the dial, maybe the knobs, the push button. You can preset it to 102.9 and always have it ready. Here today for a chalkboard chat with our school committee chair, Paul Griffith. Paul, thank you for doing this.
Steve,
Welcome.
thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it. It's always great catching up with you and going over what all we have going on with our meetings. I know they're always a little bit late, so it's great to have this chance to kind of condense it for the community.
At least it's a recap, and we're doing it. And I appreciate the other attempt you're doing is you're giving other members a chance to do that as well, which is good. I'm looking forward to having the other discussions. Not that yours and ours isn't good, but many more voices just I think is going to help.
Yeah, I think it's great. I recognize that everyone on the committee, it's a huge commitment for everybody, and I love the different voices and opinions that people bring. So having the opportunity for them to really get to, have these exchanges with you and really kind of get those voices out there is really, personally, it was a big goal. So I really appreciate you supporting with that. And I do look forward to you having some more conversations with other committee members.
Definitely looking forward to it because, twice a month we have opportunities.
We do, just a few.
So you did have one. I'm even slipping on the January 27th is
Yes.
what we're recapping. Time is just
Snow day.
flying. So
Yeah.
the big thing was budget, and this is not the last time we're going to hear it, because clearly this was the superintendent's recommended budget. And then I believe after you make your healthcare discussion, which we'll get into a little bit more, then the budget book comes out and you have a budget presentation, but then you still have another meeting to vote on it.
Yes. So to your point, this is a very long process. The school committee has actually really made it a priority of ours to get this information out as early as possible because we recognize that with so many moving pieces and such large numbers, the more time we have to discuss with the community, the more time we have to kind of, impress upon them the importance of where we're investing, the better for everybody. Both helps us, making sure that the schools know kind of really that things are going well. But then also with town council, it lets them start kind of developing their questions and their understanding so that as they're going into the budget season, for them, it starts about a month and a half later. They've had an opportunity to really formulate where a significant portion of the overall town budget goes. So yeah, we get it started out now. We did have a great presentation by Jonna and Lucas this past week. Lots of information in there. I would definitely encourage anyone, to look at it. The link is actually on the school committee website. So you can look at the presentation, just kind of go, slide by slide, seeing how all the different numbers go back and forth at your own pace. And the presentation itself has some really great discussions. But then, to your point, after this presentation, next week, so next Tuesday, we're going to be having a budget hearing. And that it is literally, it's what everyone always asks for, actually. It's the line by line. Literally, we get dozens upon dozens of pages, and every single section of the school budget, every single subsection of that budget, we go through and look at every single thing. You'll hear committee members put holds, basically waiting for more information, kind of as we go through. And that's actually a pretty neat experience because instead of just having somebody run through, list everything out, you find out really where people want to dig in more, and you can have those questions. So, like if community members have certain questions on things, reaching out to us and saying, "Great, what's that line item?" The opportunity to say, "All right, hold," and then we come back to it later and explore that line item further. It's also a unique situation for the school committee, where like ZBA and planning board, even the town council, quite often have public hearings. And in those instances, it's actually a moment of empowerment where the community is required to be allowed to provide feedback. So it's not like citizens' comments where you just come in and you say, "Great, here are my thoughts on things," or "Here's my opinion. This is something that needs to be changed," or suggestions for the future. It really is on topic and getting your questions answered. So for us, this is one of the very, very few times that we ever hold public hearings, and it's surrounding budget.
Right.
So if anyone is interested, if we haven't dulled you to the, put you to sleep at this point, or by the end of this meeting, next Tuesday, we're actually starting at 6 o'clock. So it's something new. Instead of 7, we're going to be shifting forward to 6 o'clock, actually following after town council, because then when you stay to midnight, it means you put in 6 hours instead of just 5. But public hearing, anyone who has questions about the budget is more than welcome to come. Ask your questions. You are required to be provided an opportunity to speak and ask those questions. So you're not just sitting around for, for a few hours to listen and then make a comment about something else. So definitely come engaged. Love to hear your questions. Love to really hear what the community is prioritizing, and where they're concerned. I think it's always a great way to kind of foster that communication around the budget when we actually have something in front of us.
Yeah, and clearly, while the presentation is available, and I chose not to separate the audio for the meeting because as I was starting to go through that, it turned out 3/4 of the meeting was the budget. So it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to have just the other piece as a separate. So I just kept it together as opposed to some of the recent council meetings or even your prior meetings where there was a significant chunk that made sense to put like all the all in one separate podcast episode so people could just dive into that. But that much said, the budget, and I think there were some key items. So level service, bringing it in at 2.5% of an increase over last year, and executing or at least starting down that path to execute to move the healthcare cost, which prior to this, we're only in the school committee, school district budget, different from every other town department. Now you're moving it into the town department line item. So at least in forward comparisons to all the other districts, excuse me, all the other departments, when they say they get a 2.5% increase, you exactly have the same 2.5% because the healthcare is not throwing your percents off, which it has realistically over the time.
And that's, I think you really hit things on the head and sum things up very well. It's a big number to be working with when we look at the overall budget. We did operating budget came in right at that 2.5%, but our healthcare increased by about 8.8 million, which was actually 14% just on its own. And that's something that is really always kind of a big challenge. And to your point, we're the only department that has that in our budget. So we've actually been working a lot. Lucas, Jana, and Jamie have been working really well together to coordinate and really kind of work on the synergies between our two, sub-organizations, so that moving healthcare over to the town is something where it's a shift. It doesn't make costs go away. The
No.
town is still responsible for it overall. However, what it does is everybody else's budget has healthcare in this single line item. I think it's line 910.
Right.
And what this allows us to do now is basically we have one person really kind of overseeing instead of having someone overseeing to then hand it to the other person. It really creates some synergies. And it's just more efficient. And again, from a line item perspective, it makes things much clearer so that when we come in and we say 2.5%, that's it. We're not trying to kind of argue and say, well, it's 2.5% if you take out this and that. It is really kind of the goal that we've been working towards for quite a while, and really showing the diligence and I think the very realistic budgeting that Jana and Lucas have gone through, kind of building it from the ground up. That was a really, really big part of this in order to get to this 2.5% increase.
Right, because I think with the 8.8 in there, you would have come in at 3.6, which
Correct.
comparable to prior years, then you still always have to explain, which some people never really get. So respectfully, I understand that. The other piece as to why now, well, from my perspective, there has been, even going back to Jeff Nutting's days, as the predecessor to Jamie, there was a series of town moves to take departments and/or functions away from the schools to allow you to truly focus on education. So custodians, fields, facilities, those moved to the town side because while I think it's 1.1 million of square feet of facility, it's 1 million for schools. But you shouldn't be focusing on the facilities because you have to educate the people that are in the schools, the kids.
Yeah.
So this is just another step in that trend to allow you for two reasons. One, to focus on the education piece, and two, to make it an evil apples to apples comparison with every other department.
Yeah, and that, is definitely the case where it's about the efficiencies of things and really making sure that we're not doubling up on resources simply because we want to say, oh, this is the schools, we're going to do this. This is the town, they're going to do that. And to your point, recognizing that it is very much so a shared item across the board. Like, and I think people focus a lot on, which part of the school or which part of a town budget item it goes to the schools. And really, I think what we need to look at is much more holistically. Like, we really are kind of a universal program where every aspect of what we do interacts with other aspects.
Correct.
Like,
You
the
can't be
DPW we
isolated.
rely on heavily, grounds, things like that. But then you look at, really some of the fantastic teachers we have here. They're giving back in many different ways to the community. And I think, we need to kind of look at it much more holistically going forward instead of where does each thing sit? It's all sitting in the same pot at all times. And actually, the other big thing for us with the insurance is, if you remember a few meetings ago from town council, they voted to move the entire town over to the GIC.
Correct.
That actually kicks in this summer. So for us, there's a natural series of engagements that occur. There's a couple of different programmatic adjustments to be made. So switching kind of everything all at once and combining it made the most logistical sense as well. So we could, basically there's no hiccup where it's, all right, we're all in GIC, schools are separate than the town,
Right.
and then we put them together in another year. It's just do it all together at once.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And historically, for the listeners, if they hadn't been paying attention before, and I understand that because I wasn't paying attention at one point in time till I got involved, and that's another story. But the town has historically looked at GIC, and up until the last couple of years, and Jamie's mentioned it, and I think in other discussions they mentioned that the town was able to actually get fairly competitive bids for healthcare for the town employees, which include both town and schools anyway. But the last couple of years, we've been really costing the healthcare. So they don't want to bid. And it becomes a demographics issue. So by getting into a larger pool, i.e., the state pool, now, if we have some inequities that respectfully may be some individuals here and there going through some personal challenges on health, et cetera, which still everybody's paying for, now we can leverage the larger benefit of being in the state pool and getting the same kind of level services that we're wanting, but at a lower cost, hopefully, or at least lower than we could get on our own.
Exactly. Yeah, and Jamie has been pretty clear about that. Our run loss rates have been very, very high. Essentially, insurance companies lose money on us, which takes it takes a very challenging couple of situations to really achieve that. And to your point, there are situations that I think are hard that kind of add up to that. But when it comes to looking at how the insurance companies approach things, like for them, it's just about the numbers, and we do not present a great investment for them at the time. So yeah, going to the state, I think, is going to be something that definitely helps us out, and it keeps things more consistent. And that is one of our big drivers. Again, like I said, this past year, it's 14% increase. That's, we have the 2 point, Prop 2.5. We're still stuck within that. And for to have such a large aspect of our costs go up by 14%, is very impactful.
Then that would di directly affect, negatively affect, in my point of view, to a certain extent, the education effort that really is the focal point of the district anyway. And while at this point you're at 2.5 with level service is a key term where folks should be aware that just simply means that whatever we're doing this year, we're continuing next year. So, oh, by the way, things that were supposed to come as part of landing the plane, but then because of the override got cut, those aren't coming back. Those still are out there. All we're doing this year is taking what we're doing this year and then moving it forward with whatever the necessary adjustments are per contract agreements, negotiated rates, things of that sort, to provide the same services next year.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I think it will be an interesting year because we've come off of two really really challenging years, right? So we had the redistricting, we had two failed overrides, both of which came kind of at the last minute for us on a budget perspective, where both times, essentially we had to come back and make the cuts ourselves after town council had voted on the reduced amounts because the override failed. And one of our biggest goals this year is showing the stability and kind of showing the consistency that people should be able to expect from us. Instead of, all right, we have a planned budget, people can be excited about it, and then, oh, well, we didn't actually get the allocation we were hoping for. Now all of a sudden it's significantly less. Now we got to let go, and let go of a bunch of different programs and all the impacts there. But then we find some additional money, town council listening to a lot of the residents then comes up with a bit more to help support something. So then we try to bring people back. Sometimes folks have already moved on to other positions. Like that kind of chaos is really just not conducive to long-term success. And I think our administration has been very sensitive to that and wanted to say, great, it might not be everything that we want. We know it's not everything that we want. However, it is something that we can effectively plan for, that there's a sense of stability. And really the hope is that people feel for the first time in 2 years, going into the end of the year, we know what next year is going to be. Instead of hoping that it's going to get, going to have some changes that we've all desired, or being so concerned about what, how deep the impacts are going to be on the other side. This year, really, the goal is to continue landing the ship, but then also just make sure the waters are a little smoother this time so that people are able to just focus, again, on what you've said about, education and focusing on the students.
'Cause the other hot button has been certainly in the fee arena with busing fees, sports fees, et cetera. And those at this point aren't changing.
No, and I think, the fees are a really big challenge. I'm actually trying to pull it up. I've got everything off to the side just as a little bit of a cheat sheet so people understand why I'm looking around. The fees have been kind of a tricky scenario for us. On one hand, there's a recognition of the additional burden that it places on families. I think, all of us on school committee have kids in the school systems. We understand it very directly. And we can appreciate just how hard it is sometimes when, these kind of decisions come down. It's always hard to be as a parent, well, we can't do this because of what the fees are now. And that's really not the goal for us, is we want things to be accessible. But we're also stuck in a situation where, we have basically two sides of the ledger, right? We have our revenue for a school. You don't necessarily see a whole lot of points of revenue. It's whatever the taxes bring in, the town council allocates. But there are certain things that can be supported by revenue, and those are things like from our revolving funds, as you had mentioned. So like transportation is one of them, athletics. We have ECDC, big thing for us as well, and then like school lunch and activities. These are all things that we actually can collect, additional funds to help cover, but there's a certain balance to be had there too. And, like transportation is a great example. I've gotten a lot of questions about this where, our fees had gone from about 350 or so up to 500 with no cap per family. So if you had three kids in the schools riding the buses, it's $1,500 for the year. And this year we did dial it back and reinstitute that cap. And not quite where we'd like for it to be. Like honestly, if we would be able to have that fee, even lower and really encourage folks to ride and help reducing the congestion with the schools, that would be great.
That's
But
another key factor there that some
right.
people not maybe they're realizing late, but
Well,
that needs to be
and
addressed.
we will be very vocal as soon as the bus signups open up. Definitely want to be sitting in that traffic. The best way to do it is to make sure that the buses have an opportunity to, transport as many of the kids as possible. But for us, transportation, we're spending upwards of $1,200 per child. Right. So this is a pretty significant cost. And when you put that in context of, the $360 for the fee, you realize that even when we were charging 500, per child, we weren't coming close to half.
No.
And that's where the whole kind of equation gets challenging. And with busing, it's obviously a big priority for us, making sure that students are able to get safely to and from school. And our activities and our athletics are very important for well-rounded students as well. My kids are in both activities and sports. They love both. And I think it's very important that everyone has that chance. But there's also a lot of cost associated with those. And, in some instances, it's come down to the idea of like, all right, great. How can we support all these different programs if we can't afford to pay for all of them? And the counter there is the uncomfortable truth of the avenue out, and the only way that we could pay for them without cutting directly into our actual, like, our teacher budget and stuff like that, is with fees. But then you see these very, very large fees that are impactful to people. But it is one of the very few ways that we have as a school committee to be able to mitigate our costs and continue to offer something. It just might not be in the exact format that people are hoping for, or quite as accessible as people are hoping for.
It's a challenging world for sure.
It is, it is. And there are some other things that we've looked at doing to try and, bolster our finances as best we can. Like we do look at grants pretty consistently as other avenues to try and support. Actually, we had one grant that we got the past 2 years that we're not getting anymore, and that's actually a measure of success, which is kind of an interesting way to view it. But this is our innovation career pathway. We actually heard about this right at the beginning of the year, and we were able to get money from the state to get started, basically explore the idea, run through all the different, potential avenues to really benefit the students. And then last year they gave us a pretty significant amount, about $75,000, to really implement this, to get everything off the ground and get things running. And one of the key things with that is that these types of grants, they can be a pretty significant amount of money, tend to be awarded to folks who will follow through. So if you need the grant as the only way you could possibly pay for a certain service, you're probably not going to get the grant. If you're going to be able to support it after the fact and really kind of instill that value and go forward on it, then you have a much better chance. So that's why this one, it did roll off this year, but we have instituted the innovation career pathways program, and we've been really efficient with it. But this, and being able to kind of show that we can do it and then sustain this for an extended period of time, is a great way to say to the state and to the feds, we can do this. Like, trust us with your money, because whatever programs you help us set up and get off the ground, we can efficiently run for the benefit of the students.
And while grants seem to be, that quick, easy win, oh, just get more grants. Well, grants, to your point, and Chloe, from my experience, both in corporate, nonprofit, and then reporting on town business, grants are rarely operationally budget focused. They're all to augment, or to your case, no, it's a new program. You can get the startup cost and then you assume it on your own, but you have to build those pieces into the budget in order to go on your own so that they can do, the 100 to get started, the 100 to get started, and then you're on your own. And then, yeah, then it's the credit to the district and it's craftily and deliberately crafting how to implement the pathways and coordinate amongst, particularly in the high school. But then one of your policy pieces was to also take that awareness of the high school now having this pathway available to start passing it back to middle schoolers who will eventually be there so that they at least are aware that, oh, I can do that there. Well, what can I do here to help me to get there? So it is integrated in a lot of what's going on, but it's not going to be, an operational panacea by any means. It will always be, a little thing here, a little thing there. Little respectfully, there may be some significant ones, but it's not going to solve a $2 million deficit by any means.
No, and we do have a couple of decent sized ones. We get about 1.6 million from the federal government. And these are associated with different metrics and demographics
Yeah,
that
title
we,
ones, et
basically we
cetera.
continue. Yeah, Title One through Four. And the main challenge there is that we have a situation where those are grants that are granted according to a formula. Formulas can and do change, and in some instances they can change very rapidly without a whole lot of notice. So this is something, we do a great job of planning, but it's something that we have called people's awareness to, is that these formula changes could be challenging. But as of now, they've been consistent. The other big challenge that we run into with them is that they don't really change. So just because, you have a grant, from 1 year to the next does not mean that it actually increases. Doesn't matter what inflation is, doesn't matter what your true expenses are or any other major changes. If the formula says that's the amount you're going to get, there's not usually a whole lot of desire to increase the actual amounts being provided, and there's not much of a mechanism for inflationary adjustments in most of these grants. So over time, like this year, you look at it, most of our grants went up $100, a few hundred dollars, maybe a couple thousand, if that.
Less than 1% for sure.
Yeah, it's not really moving the needle for us.
No.
So that's the other part of it, is they're there and they're helpful, but they're increasingly a smaller and smaller portion of overall budget, just because of the nature of how they're structured.
Right. And given some of the other things that are happening at the federal level, we're also fortunate. Granted, we can get, no pun intended, that million something. But even if the million something went away, it's not like we got a half a budget to replace.
Yes. Yeah. We are fortunate enough that, if it's like $1.6 million out of a $72 million budget, that would hurt considerably. But it's not 40 million, or it's not
No.
30 million. It's a
Right.
much more reasonable number.
Correct. Right.
That does actually segue really nicely into one part that is at risk, however. And we actually did detail this a little bit. If people are following along, we go into the detail starting on slide 28 and then 29. And this is where we're talking about the local aid. So this is now the state, and they do provide a significant amount of money back to the towns, predominantly around Chapter 70, which is focused on education and reimbursement. And this is actually, kind of a very interesting path, because the state, Massachusetts, prides itself so much in its education that we actually have state mandated levels of funding per pupil. And these levels, they take everything into account. It's not just what the school budget is, it's also what the town contributes to it. There's really kind of a large series of numbers that go in. But a very large amount of the money that, that we actually get for our budget comes from this Chapter 78. So this year, actually, we're getting roughly $30 million, $30.4 million from the state. And to the point we were making earlier about things changing, this is one of those points that has been discussed quite a bit over the past few years at the state level. And what it is it's an adjustment to something called the Hold Harmless provision. And essentially what that provision did is it said, all right, one of the most important things for schools is consistency. And if we had to worry about what the state aid was going to be, every couple of years, where if, like, have move-ins and then people move out, where we have rapid changes to population and then things drift down. If you had to make big changes to what the state is providing, based on what the state is providing you every couple of years, it could make things very unstable. So the state, thankfully, said, all right, basically, once you get up to a certain level, you'll stay at that level. We will continue to add. There's a base increase for every student every year. This year, the expected increase was about 30. I think we actually came a little bit above this. But when you think about the number of students we have, 4,000 and change, $30 is not, that's not the make or break number.
No.
But what is more disconcerting is that there have been discussions around readjusting how this hold harmless policy works. And if that were to come, basically, Franklin is now recognized as a minimal aid district based on the income levels of this town. There's an assumption by the state that we can contribute significantly more to our school system. And if that were to come to pass, and they change this to basically what our Chapter 70 aid should be based on the calculation, instead of with this hold harmless provision, we would be roughly $14.9 million in the hole overnight. So there's a lot of money riding on this very simple adjustment and how this is being addressed. But it's something that, again, talking about grants and really trying to make sure that we're able to locally support as much as we can, this just highlights how real of a concern that is. And just getting that on people's radar, they're going to hear about it. Actually, we have Desi coming to talk to the town council next month, to go over a bunch of this. And it's going to be something that I think will be a little bit shocking to folks when they realize just how close we are to some not awesome decisions. Hopefully, we were able to continue to rely on the support of Becca Rausch and Jeff Roy, who have been very vocal advocates for this, recognizing just how important it is to the school system to be able to actually plan out instead of worrying about the rug being pulled out every couple of years.
Right, agreed. And then Chloe, when Chapter 70 was revised, I think in 2010, and Hold Harmless came in, and then Student Opportunity Act further revised Chapter 70, and I think it was 2018, 2019. We still benefited thanks to our legislative delegates, Senator Rausch and Representative Roy, and Senate President Spilka still had us at that point in terms of apportion, if I recall correctly. All of them were helpful in getting us into maintaining that hold harmless, and yet still allowing us to benefit from a couple of the aspects like special ed, circuit breaker, and special ed transportation, where those are all the costs that clearly we don't control, especially if they're going out of district. But the state allowed us to, at least with the formula. Now, that entire formula piece from a local aid perspective is being relooked at, and we may not find out until, well, we'll find out more from DESE as to what their timeline is, at least from what's been publicly said. Likely the study will reveal something later this year or more, in which case, even if it's a proposal, it may still take legislative action. How long is that going to take, given some of the other things that are on the radar between the state and feds, et cetera? So, yes, it's a warning. We've had the warning for a while. We just have to pay attention to it. It's not the end of the world yet, but who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely it's disconcerting. And I think that there's a lot of folks who are worried about it, not just locally, but kind of across the whole state. And really one of the biggest challenges is the fact that the overall amount contributed by the state has gone down pretty significantly over the years. And that's something that has been very challenging. I feel like, we have such a fantastic educational system here in Mass, and locals have a real pride in that. And I think the town has really done a great job of trying to support, but there are limitations specifically around Prop 2.5, and really where, the big look when it comes to finding more money outside of an override is state impacts. And that's something that, that we have very definitely been vocal with. Our representatives have been vocal. But without more money from the state to really make up those ever-growing gaps between that 2.5% and the actual rate increases, when it comes to costs, we're always going to be at a, kind of at a disadvantage. And there are little windows that the state can really help a lot faster with. You had actually mentioned special education costs as one of those things, and there, that is re funded by a separate formula altogether, where. And this is something that I think is always very interesting. People look at it in our budget and they say, great, look, you've got, $4.7 million this year from the state. And last year you had $4 million. So you're really doing well. But what people don't understand is that the way that formula works is for any student requiring additional supports, of a certain level, the schools are required to absorb $53,000 in costs first. Put things into perspective, per pupil, our average spending is somewhere around $19,000 to $20,000. After that, the state will reimburse us 75% of the amount over that. So if you think of it over time, basically the larger and larger our reimbursement rate gets, our overall costs are increasing by that much more every single time. So it's been, another challenge that we've been, reaching out to the state and trying to see what kind of support we can get there. But it's also something else that we highlighted in this presentation, and that's that we've been essentially in-housing a lot of very impressive programs where we work with students at a much, basically a much more inclusive environment where they're staying, staying in their home school, they're staying, amongst their peers. But from our perspective, we're also able to save significant amounts of money. And actually, again, scrolling through, trying to make sure that I'm giving the right numbers. But if you take everything into account, including transportation costs, all that in-housing work saves us roughly $1.7 million each year. And this is really for a couple of major programs that help our students a lot and have been something that is really recognized in the community. And we have had other schools in the area reach out and see if they can send their kids to us because they like the way that we run the program. But also, we're much more cost efficient than other, isolated organizations because of the fact that we have scale, because we have a large organization running behind it. So it's something that we really have tried to address as much as we can. I just figured this was kind of an interesting segue through the grants, the state aid, special ed aid from the state, but then also really how we're trying to counter this as best we can.
Right. Yeah, and by housing those students, which generally are at a higher or lower, depending upon how you look at it, there's less students per instructional person, so there is a higher cost to it. But compared to sending it out of district, which would be at a higher cost and an additional transportation piece, that's where we're getting the savings. And then to the benefit, I mean, we're doing the right thing for the student. They're staying with their peers, they're staying close to home, and the other students benefit as well. So it's
It
the right thing
is.
to do. And oh, by the way, we're still saving money.
And that, just kind of as a quick number on that, like our high school Strive program. If we were to send those students out of district, it'd be roughly $177,000 for the students that we have enrolled in that program. Or per pupil, I apologize. So per pupil to go outside of the district, it'd be $177,000. In district, we're able to support these students fully. Basically the state, everything's okay, and everything's being done at the same level or better, for $45,000 per pupil.
So
So
that's
really,
almost like, yeah,
there's
one third.
a huge difference there. And being able to, again, to your point, making sure that the kids are in an environment that is best for them and best for the community. I think it's easy to put numbers to it because we're talking about budget. But I think those are really the values that are easy to gloss over, but are far more important in all that we do.
Right, for sure. All right, more on the budget is coming. So I think we've kind of done the
We've beaten up the budget pretty well at this point,
recap
and folks are going to be sick of it over the next couple of weeks.
for
That's for sure.
this. So we can segue into some of the policy. You had some first readings and a couple of second readings.
We had a second reading, which is looking at the middle school pathway exploration, and this is actually what you're alluding to earlier, where it's making sure that students are, informed in middle school and aware of, basically all the different programs at high school that we have, both the different pathways, but then also our vocational systems that we have access to, in the area, so that students don't get to high school like, oh, this isn't necessarily the path that I wanted to take. We're trying to move that back and make sure that they have those conversations and discussions earlier, well in advance of when they'd have to, make those decisions, so that they end up exactly where they want to be and we're in a position that best suits them, for their long term. So that was a second reading. So what that is for us is that's now basically hard coded. It's how the school committee actually governs. We don't do the day to day, the detailing, all right, this is happening in this school and this school and this school, like all the little nuances that really filters down to the team leaders and the principals and the administration. For us, we manage through policy. So setting these policies basically says, all right, everyone who, is part of our school system follows these. So there's no decision-making process there. So like if you request something that's against the policy, people have to respond that, hey, this is the policy and they have to follow it unless the school committee deems otherwise. So this second reading, all of our policy changes come in. Basically, we have one reading, get everything out there, usually have some good discussion, answer any questions that people have. And then at another meeting, always has to be at another meeting, so people have opportunities to provide input and the public is able to see it. We'll then have a second reading that then says, all right, great. Now it's hard-coded. This is part of our policy now. We're good to go and we're moving forward. With that same thing in mind, we did have a first reading for a different policy, and this was actually focused on remote participation. And this, cheers to our policy subcommittee. A lot of work going on there, with Reese, Al, and Dave. One of the things that they've noticed, and actually, I think Al had commented in the meeting that he has a whole spreadsheet. A lot of our policies have not been looked at in quite a while. Some of them as long as 15 years. And things change over that period of time. And this is actually one of those types of updates where we had a policy in place that said only one person could participate remotely during a meeting. And the state actually during COVID came out and said, all right, these can be full remote. You don't have to, there's no limitation whatsoever. And they've not really changed that or rolled that back. We tend to be in person often, but we wanted to update that policy to make sure that it's more so in line with the state, where it's not saying, oh, everyone's always remote or everyone's never remote. It is, you're allowed to have more than one person remote because the state law says so, and policy can't go against state law.
And we
So that
had it
was.
as the one because at one point in time in council chambers, there was a conference phone and one person could dial into the phone. That was all it was.
Yeah, Zoom was not we weren't quite at the Jetsons period of time just yet. I know I'm waiting on the flying cars, but yeah. Good old fashioned phones. So yeah, so that one we updated, and then another one actually. So our meeting 2 meetings ago was rather lengthy. And towards the end we had a series of policies that we went through and enacted, but one of them we just had to follow up on and for as a formality, do it again. And this is if everyone, as they're watching along, you see a motion is made, a motion is seconded, you have discussion, and then you vote on that motion. And there was a miss with the motion second window, because we had jumped right into a presentation, and being 11 something at night, I'd blame the chair, whoever that
We
was,
were all getting a little tired
just a little
because
tired.
I wasn't even catching that you didn't vote on the last motion.
Yeah, it was well because we actually voted on it. It just wasn't properly moved. So we had already approved it. It was a rate decrease for ECDC. So that was basically we had communicated that. So we went back as a formality to make sure that it was properly moved and taken care of. So that was kind of the big thing there, when it came to the policy side. And then outside of that, we've been able to kick off the new year with a bunch of interactions with our subcommittees. So got some good updates there. Budget subcommittee, there was kind of a minimal update because everything that people saw this week, budget subcommittee had seen, 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now. And then for like PCC, Nadia did a great job. There's tons and tons of information going on there. Just really looking at a lot of the different work that is being done by the PCCs, how they're really bringing the individual school communities kind of together, with this redistricting and all the effort going in. So that was really great to hear. I'm excited to see how they continue to work. And then we had public relations. Al's always great with keeping up, and kind of making sure that people know what's going on and reaching out and engaging more with the community. And then we're also looking at, in discussing things with Reese, looking at mental health and wellness. He had some really great points of different ways that we can get engaged more with the community as well. And some of those critical details, one of them that for us is always a very, very important conversation and a great source of pride personally, in this town is our backpack program. So he was highlighting that. So for those of you who don't know what our backpack program is, the Franklin Food Pantry, partners with us on this program where essentially we have a backpack with food for the weekend that students are able to swing by the nurse's office and pick up and take home. So for any, food insecurities, it's one of our ways to try and continue to support our students and our community. And, we do it very, very discreetly. Like I said, it's basically a simple backpack. You just walk down to the nurse, just grab the backpack, and they're good to go. Like there's, no questions or anything like that. But one of the big things that we've noticed is that as you get older, you see a significant drop off in the number of people participating. And based on the demo, statistics and information available to us, we recognize that students that are using that program aren't all moving out of the district in sixth grade, but they are stopping their participation. And especially by the time you get to high school, we really see almost zero participation. So we're discussing different ways to try and engage more there and try to figure out ways for us to really help and support students so that there's. That everyone is getting really what they need, especially in times like this, when things are challenging and people are having, some issues, especially with, the inflation as it is. We want to make sure that people know that there are support systems out there and that we're able to happily provide them, and continue to find ways to get them comfortably into students' hands, for the weekend so that they're able to continue to get that support and nutrition that is really important, especially as you're going through school year.
No, it's important work, and Clive helping the food pantry on a couple of their community committees, and they're doing good work. And yeah, it was eye-opening when we heard that. It really truly drops off at the high school, and there could be a variety of reasons for that. But yeah, it needs further explanation, and we need to figure out, is it really a thing that we're missing and the students are missing? Or is it something that, okay, for whatever reason, they don't need it by that time? We don't know. But yeah, we need to figure that out.
Yeah, but it's definitely something that the food pantry has been very proactive with and brought up to us a couple of times, and we're continuing to explore the best way that we can try to help support them more and make sure that the students are getting all that they need.
Good.
But yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think that condenses the meeting, at least.
Well, and you have 3-hour meetings. Condensing is kind of a low bar.
It's succinctly, and I think to the point that we didn't get into, certainly respectfully, the line items, the details. We covered pieces that fostered hopefully better understanding of the themes that were discussed. So.
And that's I really appreciate that that's your approach to this, is that folks really have that chance to kind of watch and see what's going on. And definitely encourage anyone who has any questions, please reach out. We're always happy to hear what's going on. And actually our communications group or subcommittee has been tracking, essentially as people are sending in emails, they're making sure to track it. And if things aren't being addressed, they're following up with it to really make sure that people have have that kind of feedback to make sure that everyone knows that they are, it's not just an email off into the void. We do see it. And sometimes it takes time to get back. Sometimes it's trying to make, basically you respond once action's been taken. It's always a much better feeling when you're like, great, great point. We took care of that, or we look to address that. But we do really have a system in place to make sure that we are getting that done and things aren't falling through the cracks.
No, we appreciate your work on that and the rest of your community and certainly the district. They're doing good work. And we want to help spread that word. So yeah, to your point, Chloe, when the meetings, if people aren't aware, when the meeting finishes, the YouTube video is shared with a quick brief the next day in Franklin Matters. And then a day or two later, generally, somewhere in that ballpark, we'll have the recap. It depends upon schedules, but the recap will come. And then the audio will also be shared. And as I mentioned earlier, this time I put the audio together because the bulk of it was the budget. It didn't make sense to have the separate piece. Whereas in the prior one, we had lifelong learning doing the explanation around the expansion of the childcare. The teaching and learning went into the MCAS Plus presentation. So those could stand alone and respectfully, we're worthy to stand alone. As opposed to having, one 4-hour session. So, yeah, it makes it easier. Hopefully, the access it's accessible. Let's hope people
Yes.
use it. So,
I hope so too.
well, thank you again for doing what you're doing, for doing this to the listeners. Thank you for listening.
Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
And stay tuned because there's more in the budget, certainly. As it goes through with the budget hearing for the school committee, then it'll go to FinCom, then it'll go to Council. Lots of discussions to be had before we get whatever the final number is. And a
Long
quick,
journey.
long journey. But it'll be here quicker than that because it's May something is when the Town Council does their hearing. So yeah, it's already February. Where did January go?
Went fast.
It did. All right. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.